The domestic political landscape this week has both a structural story and several individual stories that are each interesting on their own terms. The structural story is the SAVE Act standoff that has frozen the House of Representatives. Steve Bannon, who, it's worth noting, was calling Speaker Johnson our guy not that many months ago, is now publicly calling him an unmitigated disaster. That's not a minor intra-party squabble. Bannon's audience is the populist base that drove Trump's political movement, and when that faction's most prominent media voice turns on the House Speaker, it creates real procedural problems. Johnson cannot pass legislation through a chamber where his own caucus's ideological engine is actively working against him.
The SAVE Act itself, the Secure and Accountable Voter Enrollment Act, would require documentary proof of citizenship to register to vote in federal elections. The sticking point involves implementation details and, critically, a provision that's gotten tangled with a broader government funding fight. The timing matters because a federal judge this week blocked a USPS proposal to withhold mail ballots from states that refuse to share voter data. Senate Democrats, led by Schumer, immediately sent letters demanding that Trump officials preserve election records. The voter data fight is metastasizing across multiple branches simultaneously, judiciary, executive agencies, and the legislative standoff, which makes it genuinely difficult to track as a single story.
The GOP senator blocking Trump's $88 billion war funding request over hurricane relief is a fascinating intra-party pressure point. I won't name the senator because we don't have confirmation of which member it is as of this morning, but the dynamic is significant. A Republican senator from a hurricane-vulnerable state is essentially holding defense appropriations hostage to domestic disaster relief. This is the kind of vote trading that appropriations bills have always involved. But the scale of the war funding request, $88 billion, makes this particular negotiation unusually high stakes.
Let me talk about the Supreme Court stories because there are two significant ones this week that cut in very different directions. First, the court halted fines against a reporter who refused to reveal a source. This is important for press freedom as a practical matter. Journalist privilege cases haven't had a clean Supreme Court ruling in decades, and the lower courts have been inconsistent. Halting the fines doesn't resolve the underlying question, but it prevents the financial coercion mechanism from forcing disclosure while the legal question works through the system.
The second Supreme Court story, the Alito-Sotomayor clash being characterized as a misunderstanding, is actually a significant institutional management story. Public disagreements between justices almost never surface in official court communications. When the court goes out of its way to describe a clash between its most prominent conservative and its most prominent liberal as a mere misunderstanding, that's the court attempting to protect the institution's public legitimacy at a moment when its approval ratings are under significant strain. Whether the underlying disagreement was substantive or procedural, the fact that it leaked at all tells you something about the internal temperature inside One First Street.
Trump's request to the Supreme Court to back no-bond immigration detention is the third court story this week, and it connects to a broader pattern of the executive branch testing the boundaries of detention authority. The administration has been pushing on this across multiple cases, the Alien Enemies Act invocations, the immigration enforcement operations, and the Supreme Court has been the ultimate arbiter each time. A ruling backing no-bond detention would affect an enormous number of pending immigration cases and would effectively remove the individualized bail hearings that lower courts have repeatedly required.
The Buttigieg story, Michigan State Police confirming that an anonymous allegation about him being separated from his children was fabricated and politically motivated, is a window into the current environment for anyone who might be considering a 2028 presidential run. And the polling story is directly relevant. Harris's lead in 2028 Democratic primary polls is narrowing. Her lead was dominant 6 months ago, and whatever that lead is now, it's smaller. The field is starting to form. The Emmer "Go the Hell Back" remark at a Faith and Freedom Coalition event, drawing a sharp response from Representative Ilhan Omar, and the Florida AG arresting another Biden commuted offender under state law to test the boundaries of executive clemency. These are all pieces of the same puzzle about what the 2026 midterm environment and 2028 general election setup looks like.
The Florida AG case is legally interesting beyond the politics. Federal pardons and commutations are constitutionally the exclusive domain of the president under Article 2. States prosecuting individuals whose federal sentences were commuted are effectively claiming that state law can operate independently of federal executive clemency, which is an extraordinarily aggressive constitutional position. The courts will have to resolve whether a federal commutation creates any barrier to state prosecution for separate state law violations, which is the theory Florida appears to be pursuing. It's not settled law, and it will be.
Texas approving Bible readings for 5 million public school students will immediately face Establishment Clause litigation. That's almost certain. The question is which federal circuit it lands in, and whether the Supreme Court's current composition, which has been notably more receptive to religion in schools arguments since the Kennedy v. Bremerton ruling in 2022, would sustain such a program. The D.C. settlement story, the man detained for playing the Star Wars theme at National Guard troops, cost the city an unknown sum to settle, but it'll serve as a reference case for First Amendment protections at military deployments on U.S. soil. Playing a film score at uniformed troops does not constitute a threat, and apparently the legal system agrees.